On this episode of The Big Number, we react to the NBA Cup quarterfinal games between the Knicks, the Raptors, the Magic, and the Heat, and we preview the semifinal games in Vegas this upcoming weekend. That's coming up right now. Welcome, 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 welcome to The Big Number. I am Tom Haberstroh, and as always, I am joined by my man, your man, Dan Devine. Dan, what's going on, man?
Tom, it's NBA Cup time. We've reached the win or go home knockout stages. Four teams entered Tuesday, two are left. We're going to have another quarterfinal night on Wednesday. There's a lot to be excited about. Single elimination games. The intensity is palpable. I think the excitement is through the roof. We're all going to Vegas. None of us are actually going to Vegas, but we're all going in our minds. I'm ready to put up some numbers. So, Tom, hit me with it. What is this week's big number?
Dan, this week's big number is 8.6. That is the New York Knicks point differential this season through 24 games. That's a really big number, especially for the Knicks franchise. That's actually the best 24-game start for the franchise since the NBA-ABA merger, Dan. The 1973 champion team, the 1970 champion team, both had bigger point differentials through 24 games in their championship seasons. But right there, third place, plus 8.6 for your New York Knicks that just advanced to the semifinals. They're going to Vegas. Dan, the Knicks are back.
I mean, the idea of, somebody brought it up the other night, like the idea of the Knicks hoisting a trophy is just, it's so, so foreign. Like the idea, if the Knicks were to win the NBA Cup, like a player in a Knicks uniform holding something aloft feels like, oh yeah. And then the reason is because literally 1973, it has not happened in more than half a century. This version of the Knicks is off to a pretty rollicking start. There was a really impressive win in Toronto, where the Knicks have not been a good road team so far this season, but really shaky on the defensive end in the first quarter and then clamped down in the second and us like hit the gas, left the shorthanded Raptors in the dust on the way to the semifinals. And like, it was a pretty good encapsulation of the high-end outcomes for what this Knicks team can be, where the offense is clicking on all cylinders. You've got downhill movement. You've got ball movement, spraying out for three-point shots. Mike Brown loves those spray threes after a paint touch. And then you see on the defensive end where you've got like a weaponized version of OG Anunoby as a protector. Mikal Bridges sort of off the ball, Roman wreaking havoc. You've got the bigs that are able to body up, get the defensive rebound, and then get out. It's moving faster. They're getting out and they're running the floor. They're looking for early offense. These were things that you didn't necessarily see a ton of in the previous iterations under Tom Thibodeau, even as those teams were excellent, consistently playoff teams. They made the Eastern Conference Finals last year. The idea behind that move to Mike Brown was higher ceiling on both ends of the floor. And I think a game like last night shows you they're able to reach up toward that in a way that's pretty exciting when you get down to games that matter.
I feel pretty good about anointing them as the East favorite right now, based on this whole season, not just what happened on Tuesday night, how they dismantled the Toronto Raptors, and Jalen Brunson's just, I mean, unreal. The start that he came out in this game, you want to talk about whether these games matter. It certainly matters to Jalen Brunson. Came out just dominating in this game, and he's leading a team that needs to kind of step up in the absence of the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are stumbling. You got the Milwaukee Bucks with Giannis being injured and just, you know, the bottom falling out on that team. And of course, you got the Boston Celtics without Jason Tatum. This is the time for the Knicks to take advantage, and they're coming off to the best start in franchise history since the championship team. So this is great. I mean, they're 17-7. The offense is second in the NBA, schedule adjusted. They've been on an absolute tear here. And you got to say, the decision to move away from from Tom Thibodeau to Mike Brown paid quite the dividends right now, Dan, when you're looking at the way that this team is playing. Just a note on what Mike Brown has done to this team is he's not leaning into the five-man lineup and playing them 48 minutes a game like Tom Thibodeau did for so many years. It's just, look at the stats from, I have them right here, 940 minutes for the five-man lineup last season from Josh Hart, Mikal Bridges, Cat, Jalen Brunson, and OG. That lineup outpaced everybody in the league. There was only two lineups in the NBA last season that had over 500 minutes. One of them was the Minnesota Timberwolves starting lineup, had 714. And then you had the starting five for the Knicks at 940, about 20 per game. They wanted to reduce those minutes and reduce the workload for Jalen Brunson. You're seeing here, his dribbles per game under Mike Brown has plummeted from 516 dribbles per game last year under Tibbs, and now is down to a nice and tidy 440 dribbles per game, a difference of 73 fewer dribbles. And he's playing about the same minutes. So this isn't just like, hey, he's just not playing as much as Tibbs did. But the rest of the guys, damn. You look at Josh Hart, who's been playing a lot off the bench, 8 minutes fewer per game. He was the leading leader in minutes per game last year, now playing 8 minutes less than he did this year. OG Anunoby playing 6 minutes fewer than he did last year. Mikal Bridges, Cat playing a couple minutes fewer than they did last year. And the result is they're still beating everybody by a big point differential. And so for me, Dan, just the big picture stuff that Mike Brown has been doing, and thanks to Leon Rose building out the bench a little bit better, especially in the backcourt, this feels like to me that the team really wanted to not be so rigid with the lineups, to lessen the workload for all of those guys. And so far, Mike Brown's Knicks are doing a lot better than I think I even expected through 24 games. Best point differential since the 70s. And that is a hallowed ground that the Knicks want to get back to, is those 70s teams. And they're doing a great job so far in this NBA Cup. They have a real shot at winning this thing. And this is the type of team that wins the NBA Cup, is a veteran-laden team that has something to play for. And the Knicks look awesome right now under Mike Brown, Dan.
Yeah, 8 of 9 in the win column. And I think that's some of that has been with Josh Hart getting back into the starting lineup. Some of that was when OG Anunoby was out with a hamstring issue. But then they get OG back and they decide, you know, Hart's been playing so well. He's shooting the lights out, which is not something you necessarily associate with Josh Hart. But he, like the rest of the team, has just been, you know, phenomenal from long distance. And the vibe and the energy that they're able to play with when they get smaller, that was the concern last year. It was, if you have Josh Hart in the starting lineup, because Tom Thibodeau is just never going to take Josh Hart off the floor when, if he can help it, are you going to be good enough defensively? Are you going to be able to handle when teams cross match against you, when they put a wing on Cat and a center on Hart, and they can kind of muck things up? We saw the Pistons do that. We saw the Celtics do some of that. We saw the Pacers do some of that. Like, it was the book on how to deal with them. And part of the idea with Mike Brown was, we're going to experiment with all different kinds of lineups so that when we get to one of those matchups, we're not going to say, well, we've only played one way all year. We're going to say, if somebody's going to guard Jalen Brunson the full 94 feet, full court press, we need other people to be able to bring the ball up and initiate offense. We need other sets to be able to get him off the ball and let Jalen Brunson cook in a way that is, yeah, the minutes might be the same, the shot attempts might be about the same, but the way he's arriving at some of those shot attempts, it's not as hard sledding. It's going to be a little bit easier to get him off the ball. And you see the catch and shoot numbers are going up, and the amount of cleaner looks that he's able to, he can generate a clean look for himself basically in his sleep, but getting some easier touches for him and giving guys like Mikal Bridges, who's having a phenomenal season this year, like OG Anunoby, giving them more ownership of the offense, more of an opportunity for them to let it fly, the neon green light that Mike Brown has put out there. It emboldens everybody else. It gives everybody else a little bit more ownership. And you have way fewer possessions where it's everybody else standing around for 20 seconds waiting for Jalen to kind of like chisel his way into the paint and then step back. Like, that can only be to the good for the whole team. And everyone's moving quicker. It's not all motion offense all the time like they were at the beginning of the season. They are still playing a lot more pick and roll. They're playing matchup hunting, all that kind of stuff. But it's just more fluid. It moves quicker. There's a bit more bounce and life to it. Everybody's more engaged. And obviously the proving ground here is going to be what it looks like in April, May, and then Knicks fans hope into June. That will be when we will, you know, when the judgment on the decision to go from Tom Thibodeau to Mike Brown is made. But all you can ask for is, are you experimenting more? Are you finding ways to sort of innovate and iterate on the offense? And are you giving some of that second unit, some of those younger players, more minutes for Miles McBride. Give Tyler Cole like a chance to show that he can run the offense in the second unit when Brunson sits. Are you experimenting more with the two big lineups with Mitchell Robinson and Karl Towns? Are you finding creative ways to get the most out of all these ingredients? So far, so good. 17-7, third best point differential in the NBA, best in the East, and now on to the semifinals of the NBA Cup. There's a lot of teams where you'd say winning this kind of tournament, like it doesn't necessarily mean a ton. It's not, we've seen it didn't propel the Lakers to a title, didn't propel the Bucks to a title. But the idea of a proof of concept, this way that we play, these changes we've made can result in meaningful improvements. I think we're seeing that from the Knicks right now. And if they're able to continue and advance in this tournament, I think that's what would you'd be able to say for Mike Brown and this club.
Yeah, I think it's a very real scenario that we're going to see the eventual finals matchup here in the rest of the NBA Cup. You got the New York Knicks facing on Saturday night. They'll be facing the Orlando Magic, another team that has been fantastic to start the season, especially as of late. We're going to talk about them in a second here, but I just want to reiterate, like, the Knicks, when they let go of Tom Thibodeau in shocking fashion, this was a very high bar for Mike Brown to clear. And he's done it so far through about, you know, a third of the season, that they've basically remodeled, not, I wouldn't say overhauled the offense, but you're seeing a lot more threes, the biggest increase in 3-point shots of anyone in the NBA by pretty wide margin. The Blazers, the team that I do the broadcast for, we've been talking a lot about the broadcast, you know, how much they're doing Denny Avdia driving kicks, right? They're trying to get to spray out to 3-point shooters. Well, Mike Brown, he came in and was just like, yeah, we need to get more to the corner three. We need to get more from stretching, spacing the floor, making things easier. And this year they're shooting 41 3-pointers per game. And that's an increase from last year at 34 under Tibbs. And that differential is the largest in the league. And that is something that I think, you know, Thibodeau in his first year taking over, he had been able to establish more of a 3-point shot, but he had gone away from that last year as he's going into more those, you know, Mitchell Robinson lineups, or he just wasn't able to get, you know, more of those touches because so much of the offense was Jalen Brunson grinding every possession down and trying to find a nice shot in the mid-range. They're going deeper into the shot clock less this season. And I just think when you look at those highlights from earlier, a lot of those are Jalen stepping into early transition threes in ways that you didn't really see last season, where I think Mike Brown is encouraging the guys, hey, if you have an open three, take it, especially you, Jalen. If we can get you with a step in rhythm 3-pointer early in the shot clock, go take it. And that's a new thing for this New York Knicks team. And Jalen Brunson, if he can get easier looks, open looks, especially off of catch and shoots, you know, Mitchell Robinson grabbing what seemed like a kind of an on-purpose miss off the front iron right back to himself and kick out to Jalen Brunson, that's stuff that I think in the long run, the more that you do that and lower the workload and not have to grind out these possessions, I think come playoff time, this Knicks team is going to have a lot more left in the tank.
That's definitely the idea. And you're right about the sort of team-wide idea of if you see it and it's open, go for it. There is one player on the Knicks averaging fewer than 5 3-point attempts per 36 minutes in their rotation, guys, and it's Mitchell Robinson. Yeah. Every other player in the, you know, and we're even talking about like Gershon Yabusele and Jordan Clarkson off the bench, like Tyler Kolek when he gets in the game. All of those guys have the opportunity to hoist when it's available to them. Because the idea is there's a volume component to that. There is an offensive rebounding component to that, which obviously has been a secret sauce element for the Knicks' offensive success ever since Mitchell Robinson's been there. And it's a way to just get everybody into a rhythm, into a flow a little bit more often. And yes, you're right. The idea of if this allows for Jalen Brunson to have a little bit less on his shoulders and then be a little bit fresher later into games, that can only be a good thing for the Knicks' ability to generate good looks against good defenses, which when they're in the semifinals against Orlando, that's going to be, those are going to come at a premium. You know, they're going to be able to put physical defenders on him. They're going to be able to have length on him, whether it's with, you know, Jalen Suggs or Anthony Black, whether they're able to have guys picking him up the full length of the court and force him to, you know, sort of slow down the offense, getting into its first action, getting over half court. We've seen teams do that to Jalen Brunson. We've seen the Knicks counter a lot more by saying, all right, we're going to get him off of it. We're going to have Mikal Bridges come up and initiate. We're going to have Josh Hart bringing up and initiate, and we can still get into things more crisply and more quickly. That stylistic idea, I think Jalen deserves a ton of credit because Jalen Brunson has been extremely good playing with all those dribbles that you just highlighted, and with the idea of we're going to go deep into the clock because I trust my ability to find something good and not generate a turnover, you know, get us in a position where we can get something on the rim. It made him an all-star, made him an all-NBA player, made him an MVP caliber, down ballot MVP choice. It made the Knicks a conference finalist. But he has said at every step of the way, especially when the Knicks have fallen short, that is not the bar. The bar is not to get close. The bar is to get there and to win the whole thing. And if there's something that I need to do to adapt and adjust and to make to give us a better chance of doing that, I'm going to listen to it and I'm going to do it. And he has done that at the beginning of the season. And I think Mike Brown deserves a ton of credit for not being dogmatic about it too. Like the idea of, yeah, when you get into a close game late, the best play is probably going to be to get it to Jalen Brunson and let him make a decision. And so it's not going to be my way or the highway. It's how do we marry these two ideas and this sort of concept of way of thinking about how we want to approach things on the offensive end. And it's resulted in high level play across the board. Josh Hart's jump as a 3-point. Josh Hart's shooting 40% from three. Like that can be such a transformational thing for this Knicks team. And if you're getting those sort of across the board improvements from him, from OG as a driver and a slasher, from Mikal Bridges as a secondary creator, like there's just an overwhelming amount of talent here. And it puts the Knicks in a position to get to some places that they haven't been in a very, very long time.
Do you know how many players on the Raptors got Jalen Brunson's buckets? Like he scored on in this game. They tried so many dudes, and Jakob Poeltl, poor guy, just was not able to, you know, stay in front. But that's what happens when you got Jalen Brunson. He scored against seven different Raptors defenders. They tried all sorts of stuff, and it's just Jalen Brunson is inevitable. Look. I love what they've done so far this season. Best start in 50 years. And when you got their starting five that seemed they played 20 minutes a game last year, which is like it's not even close. Like no other team is even close to getting that much. That five has been on the floor for 110 minutes in 11 games. It's about 10 minutes per game when they're healthy. So Mike Brown, it's exactly what you said, Dan, is we want to experiment, have different lineups, and we know what we got in those five guys. We don't need to reinvent anything. We've basically reached the ceiling on that five-man lineup because they played so much over the last few years. Now let's see what else we got. Because when that number is called in the postseason, we need them to step up in the Greg Popovich way, and that is going to pay dividends, I think, down the road, that you're going to see these guys, Shamit, McBride, Jordan Clarkson, getting a lot more minutes out there. And it's, I think, going to pay off in a big way. That's the thing is when you hear Mikal, I think it was Mikal, right? Where he's like, we got great guys off the bench. We should probably play them more last year. It's never a good sign when the guy who literally plays more than anybody is like now saying, yeah, this is too much. So I think the Knicks fans, they got to be feeling great. I bet a bunch of them are going to be in Vegas for the semifinals against Orlando on Saturday night. We're going to talk about Orlando in the next segment here. And man, this Magic team, I could see like a rivalry brewing between this Magic Knicks, just because they both are very physical and they got a lot on the line here because they both want to win not just the NBA Cup, but the NBA championship. So Dan, we'll get to those three little numbers that you got here for in a little bit. But first, I want to let everybody know that if you're watching on YouTube, this show and all of our content, at including the KOC show, which I do every week with Kevin, and the Dunker Spot, our new addition to the lineup. Awesome show. I'm so glad they're part of the Yahoo Sports Network. They're going to be, make sure we'll be moving from the Yahoo Sports to our own Yahoo NBA specific YouTube channel here in a couple weeks, December 22nd. So all of our NBA coverage will have its own home at the Yahoo NBA specific YouTube channel. So go check that out. And whether you're watching, listening, please subscribe to our new channel. It's going to be at Yahoo NBA on YouTube. Yahoo NBA. Go subscribe and catch all of our content over there, including this show right here. Right after the break, we're going to talk more about this NBA Cup action that's going to be returning on Wednesday night and Saturday with the final on Tuesday. All right. right, Dan. NBA Cup action. It's going to be Magic Knicks on Saturday. We'll find out on the other side, the Western Conference matchup. We'll talk about that later. But first, a little bit more about this East matchup here in front of us. What's your first little number?
First little number this week is plus 53. That is how many points the Orlando Magic have outscored opponents by when Desmond Bain, Jalen Suggs, and Anthony Black have shared the floor this season. Plus 53 might not sound like a particularly big number, but they've only played 72 minutes. Plus 53 in 72 minutes works out to 35.2 points per 100 possessions. And if that sounds like a lot, it's because it is. Among 1,389 three-man groups to play at least 70 minutes this season, Bane, Suggs, and Black is fourth best in net rating, behind only a pair of Oklahoma City Thunder trios and the Bucks when Giannis plays with AJ Green and Kyle Kuzma. So that idea, Bane, Suggs, Black, a kind of three-guard backcourt where Black can be a little bit of a wing, you know, you have bigger guards, there's no real small guards there. That has been a hugely valuable alignment for the Magic. All three of those guys played major roles in Orlando's 117-108 win over the Miami Heat in the other quarterfinal on Tuesday. Bane explodes for 37 points, six made threes. Jalen Suggs adds 20 with four assists and a pair of steals. And Anthony Black, 10 points, seven assists, and really strong defense on Tyler Hero helps limit him to just 3-for-10 shooting after halftime as the Magic go and kind of run away with the game for most of the second half. With those three guards on the floor, the Magic's rim rate, like how often they attempt shots right at the basket, their three-point shooting, their ball movement, all of those things go through the roof. They're forcing more turnovers. They're playing faster. Their pace is like 109 possessions per game per 48 minutes when they got those guys on the floor. They score more efficiently in transition with that three-guard lineup on the floor. It's the kind of juice the Magic just really haven't had at all in the last few years. And especially now where you've got Franz Wagner out with the high ankle sprain that he suffered against the Knicks on Sunday, it feels like they're going to need a lot more of that kind of juice, especially as if they're trying to figure out ways to score against the Knicks in that semifinal game.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a weird team because you want to say that Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner, when they're on the floor together, that they're just going to be ascending to the top of the Eastern Conference. But it's been the opposite. Like when they're separate, it's almost like this team's better in a weird way. And because of Anthony Black and because of Desmond Bane, the addition of him, it's been able to, you know, not just float and tread water when Franz is out or Paolo's out. But they've been like really good, like you said, gangbusters with a plus 32 net rating, whatever that is, with those three on the floor. And that's not to say that those three on the floor and then no Franz and Paolo Banchero, that those guys could be still on the floor in that sample size. But even if you take those guys off the floor, Franz and Paolo Banchero, in 13 minutes with those three on the floor without either of those two stars on the floor, they've outscored opponents like 36 to 24 in 13 minutes. So it's a tiny small
about a point
size.
A minute.
But that's great. It's like it shows that this roster has gotten so much better over a year. And when you look at the numbers on just the star alignment where you have both Franz and Paolo, the last two seasons, they are 27 and 27. Damn. 500. With just Paolo, they're 9-14. That's a 32 win pace. Okay. With just Franz, they're 27-19. So that's a 48 win pace. So with just Paolo, no Franz, 32. With both, 41. And then with just Franz, no Paolo, they're a 48 win team. It's really wonky. Like this season, with just Franz, they're 7-3. And luckily, Paolo, for all the Paolo stands out there, they won handily in this game against the Miami Heat with Paolo and Desmond Bane just going off. Desmond Bane going off. It's great to have these wild cards and Anthony Black and Desmond Bane on the team. Well, Anthony Black, of course, you know, having a breakout season. But Desmond Bane, Dan, he's just kind of a wild card. He had 37 on Tuesday night. It's the third time he's at least 35 points in a game this season. He's also the only player with that many 35 point games with also three single digit scoring games. It's just, it's a bit of a wild card with Desmond Bane. You just don't know what you're going to get from a scoring number. Like you're going to get that gritty defense. And he's just, I mean, every time I see like a photo of Desmond Bane, I'm just like, is he real? Like those biceps? Like, is he real? Like, I don't, is he AI? You know, like sometimes you see these off season, like, oh my God, Mitchell Robinson just put on 45 pounds of muscle and someone just did a deep fake of like Mitchell Robinson is now just looking like the Hulk. Desmond Bane is the Hulk. Like, he's legit just a cartoon character. And cartoonish numbers, 37 points in that game against the Heat, where it's just like when they're shooting as well as they did on Tuesday night. And of course, the Miami Heat did not shoot well. They got off to a great start, but fizzled quickly after that. And Orlando on their home floor marching on because, like you said, this team has a much higher ceiling, it seems like, even with Franz Wagner out with that high ankle sprain, they're able to have that offense hum in a way that they just could not get to that next gear last season without Franz on the floor. And now with Desmond Bane, they just have another lever to pull, and that's huge for this offense.
Yeah, I think a big part of it is just because of how Bane is, how attentive he is to getting downhill. Like, you know, there was this sort of joke in Memphis, they would call him Downhill Dez, with where he would be able to just put his head down, get to the rim, or get straight to the basket and transition. You're not losing your one of your two big guys, your two sort of power forward initiators. It doesn't necessarily strip out that rim pressure. You're still able to get someone who can get into the paint and put pressure on the rim, but obviously somebody that you also have to guard 30 feet away from the rim and be like, and who is a movement shooter that you have to keep track of everywhere on the floor. And that just decongests things. It opens things up. You put that with two other guys. I mean, Jalen Suggs has made himself into a high level shooter. Anthony Black, not at that point yet, but improving. And also somebody who is just a really great connective passer. You put them with a screen and dive big man, like, you know, Goga Batase or Wendell Carter Jr., somebody who can space the floor to the corner. You know, like, it just creates a geometry and a geography that's a little bit more conducive to high efficiency offense. And that's not necessarily a comment on whether Paolo Banchero is good or not. One of the favorite analytics versus eye test arguments of the NBA internet of the modern day, but they've seemed to have found something with that group. And it certainly seems it paid off against Miami, and certainly has an opportunity to pay off against the Knicks. Something they got to be aware of, especially because for our second little number here, that's 0.789. That works out very well. 0.789 is how many points per half court play the Magic scored against the Knicks on Sunday, according to Cleaning the Glass. These two teams just played each other at Madison Square Garden, and the Knicks won that game 106-100. And in that game, the Magic could not really generate good looks in the half court. If 0.789 sounds low, the risk of repeating myself, it's because it is. That's the third worst half court scoring efficiency mark for the Magic this season in 25 games played. The Knicks were in the mud too. The Magic defense got them there. New York only shot 42.9% from the field, 31.4% from deep. Brunson, Mikal Bridges, Deuce McBride all misfiring in that game. But the Magic couldn't take advantage of that because they themselves really could not consistently generate a good look in the half court, especially after Franz Wagner went out. So I think when we look at it, what this matchup could look like in the semifinals, it was a dramatically different story against Miami. 1.081 points per half court play for Orlando, third best half court outing of the season for them, with Bane getting downhill, with him spraying out, with getting Suggs on the catch and shoots, with getting a little bit more ball movement, a little bit more fluidity. They were able to take advantage of what is still a pretty darn good Heat defense. And so the question, I think, is which of those two things seems more repeatable to you? You know, if you're in a situation where Mike Brown can throw OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges and Josh Hart at that, like, Paolo Bane Suggs perimeter creation, does that grind the gears down in a way that Miami couldn't? Or is it more likely that we're going to see a little bit more of that high octane, high fluidity offense that we saw Orlando really take advantage of the game or take control of the game in those final three quarters over Miami?
Yeah, I think they're going to be much better in this matchup on Saturday in Vegas. I don't think it's like a Madison Square Garden thing. I think it's just Orlando over the last, 10 or so games, their offense has been humming. And it's just when like, I don't think Paolo's played all that well this season. I would actually say he's probably their fourth best player this year. If Desmond Bane, Franz, and Jalen Suggs, I would probably put higher up in terms of how good they are. And I know the scoring is there for Paolo. I just think that the Magic have so many different weapons now that they don't need to rely on Paolo just bully ball for so many possessions like he has historically. And I think it's just a better, more dynamic offense against the New York Knicks team that they can guard, I think, one-on-one pretty well. But if you get the ball moving and you start hitting those three-pointers, it's a different dynamic for a Magic team that just could not get any spacing, any three-point shooting. And teams like the Knicks could just pack the paint against Orlando. And once Orlando starts hitting those shots, which I think they will on Saturday, much better than they did on Sunday, I think it's going to be a much, much tougher sledding for New York.
Yeah, the Magic made 7 more threes than the Heat in the quarterfinal game. I don't know how many, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'm not sure how many times the Magic made 7 more threes than anybody over the last handful of years. But that's the dimension that Desmond Bane has brought to that team. And it's certainly one the Knicks are going to have to be aware of. That our third little number, the third and final for this segment, we're going to go back to the Knicks on it because it ties into that idea. Third little number is 113.2, which is the Knicks' defensive rating this season when they have both Jalen Brunson and Karl Towns on the floor. For the full season, 113.2 defensive rating would slot right in between, as luck would have it, the Magic in 6th place and the Raptors in 7th place. So the team the Knicks just beat and the team the Knicks are about to play in the semifinals of the NBA Cup tournament. 113.2, that's an improvement for the Knicks in Brunson cap minutes. Last season, that was 116.1 points per 100 allowed, which would have been like a 19th, 20th place defense last season. So that improvement is really important. And you saw some of it, a lot of it's on Karl Towns. Like Karl Anthony Towns has just been, he doesn't block a ton of shots. He doesn't generate a lot of flashy plays, but he's been significantly better defensively this season, not playing as often in a drop, playing a little bit more out on the floor, tagging cutters, tagging rollers, switching out on some different assignments. And you saw some of that in the second quarter last night. That was when the Knicks really turned the game over, turned it around, and took control of it. And after some early foul trouble, Towns was great in that second quarter, including on the defensive end. Had a great block on Scotty Barnes in the open floor to take away a transition bucket. Verticality contest where he sort of accepts the body contact from Brandon Ingram, gets his hands up, and does not foul. Bodied up Jakob Poeltl to force a little miss on a bunny on the inside. Poke away steal on another would-be layup by Poeltl. And these are like, this is not the kind of plays we necessarily associate Towns with making. We think, when we think of Karl Anthony Towns, we more often think, oh, he's going to like slap down on somebody's arm when he doesn't need to, or, you know, bump somebody when he shouldn't and pick up a silly foul. And that's still there. That was there in the first quarter last night. But this has also been there. Better positional defense, more comfortable in space, better able to make an impact, and then elite defensive rebounding, which has been a consistent throughout his career. And so like that's one of the big concerns about the Knicks is how well do you hold up against an elite opponent when both Brunson and Towns are liabilities in space, and they can, you can pick on both of them. The Knicks being able to get stops at like a top 10, top near top 5 level with both those guys on the floor seems like a giant deal. So just generally speaking, how real do you think that is? And do you think that the Magic are going to find their way towards trying to put those guys in action and poke at them and pick at them and make sure that it's for real?
Yeah, it's not, to me, it's not so much about the first action or the first effort. It's the second effort. For this Orlando Magic team, they feast on second chance opportunities and on the offensive boards. They're top 5 in both of those categories. So against this Orlando Magic team, it's going to be night and day compared to what the Toronto Raptors do, which that's not their game. They want to get you out in transition. And Jakob Poeltl has been battling the back issues all season. He's just not that kind of force around the basket that Wendell Carter Jr. and Paolo Banchero and Jonathan Isaac and some of these other and Goga Bitadze. The Magic are going to be beating them up or trying to get really physical with Desmond Bane under the basket. And Karl Anthony Towns has to be able to survive in that environment without fouling and doing those fouls that you talk about, is just those ticky-tack, just mind-numbing fouls where it's like, no, we need you out on the floor. Can you not, in a off-ball situation or biting on a pump fake for no reason and jumping into a three-point, like Batadze's going to do this like pump fake and then Carl's going to jump all over him. And it's like, why are you doing that? You don't need to do that for Batadze out on the perimeter. That's the sort of stuff that against the Orlando Magic is going to be really tough to survive because they play so much inside, and especially on second chance opportunities and offensive boards. That's really the Orlando Magic's lifeblood a lot of times. And so if Cat and Jalen Brunson can play big on the boards and limiting those second chance opportunities, that's going to go a long way in making sure that that defensive rating with on the floor with them on the floor stays intact. Against the Orlando Magic, they're going to test you, not just on that first action, but on those second ones, Dan.
Yeah, the Magic have, with Bane, have a movement option that, like the Raptors, especially with Emmanuel Quickley being out, he was really the only guy on that roster right now that is like a dart around and you got to stick with him. Bane's a whole other animal, and the Knicks are going to have to stay locked in over there, especially if they're able to get Brunson into the line of fire, right? If they're, you know, screening off the ball to get Anunoby off one of those guys, to get Mikal Bridges off one of those guys and draw Brunson into the hunting ground. It's something that we've seen tons of teams try in the past. Brunson's ready for, I mean, he's familiar with it. Whether he's ready for it or not remains to be seen. And that could wind up being an awfully big swing factor in deciding which team represents the East in the cup final.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Knicks on this one. If we're going to make predictions, I'm going to go with the Knicks. If Franz Wagner was healthy, I'd probably choose differently on that. But without him, it's going to be tough for Orlando to overcome the Knicks, fully healthy Knicks. And it's good to see Kat out there after he was dealing with a calf strain here in recent days. So Knicks seem to be fully healthy. Orlando does not. I think that's going to be the difference here. But it might be all for naught considering on the other side of the bracket. They got the Spurs and Wemby's lurking. Won't be playing Wednesday night. OKC just running roughshod over the entire NBA. A feisty Phoenix Suns team. And, of course, Luka, LeBron, and Austin Reeves on the other side, too. So we're going to talk more about the Western side of the NBA Cup right after this. All right, Dan, enough about the Magic and the Knicks. I'm going to go over to the Western Conference here. NBA Cup, Wednesday night. It's Suns Thunder, and then we got Spurs Lakers at the late game. And I got to say, kind of hope for an OKC Lakers matchup, just coming out of those two matchups, only because I want to see fully loaded OKC going against fully loaded Lakers. But of course, the Phoenix Suns have been just dogs this year and beaten up on teams where they shouldn't be beaten up on. Dylan Brooks and Devin Booker, we'll see if he's going to be ready to go. The Spurs are not to be counted out with Wemby. Not going to be able to play on Wednesday night. But I don't know. It feels like for the ratings and for the national audience, I think people are going to want to see OKC Lakers here in the Western side, which will play on Saturday, whoever wins out on Wednesday night. But I kind of feel like, Dan, we can't overlook both the Suns or the Spurs, right? Like, people are probably thinking without Devin Booker, without Wemby, they don't got a shot. But they've been really feisty this year.
Yeah, the Suns have kind of made the inexplicable or the unexpected their routine this year, right? Like, you know, Booker goes down in the first quarter against the Lakers. All right, Dylan Brooks is just going to score like 33 points and Colin Gillespie is going to hit eight threes and they're going to blow out the Lakers on the road. You know, you have to deal with Wemby after Wemby's been tearing everybody apart for the first five games of the season. All right, we're just going to drop the defensive blueprint to completely stifle him and hold him to 9 points and we're going to win that game. You know, they're down, I think, what was it? They were down like 7 points in the final minute against the Timberwolves. All right, we'll just come back. We'll score like 9 points in a minute 19 and we'll win that game. Like, you're right. Like, this is a team that has very much taken on the identity and the thought process, the approach of Dylan Brooks, who we saw, you know, he got to Memphis in the draft. That team started had an attitude and an edge, and he had a certain attitude that like propelled them forward into postseason play. He leaves after they move him or he goes and signs in Houston. That team completely has a defensive overhaul, becomes a playoff team. He gets moved in the Kevin Durant deal, winds up in Phoenix, and now they're having they're like a near top 10 defense and have an attitude and a snarl about him. And if Devin Booker can't go, Dylan Brooks is going to ratchet up his own. He's going to call his own number a fair amount. Here is a fun small number for this. I wrote about this in our preview for the game at Yahoo Sports. Dylan Brooks' usage rate goes up by almost 11% when Devin Booker's off the floor. And that's like, so it's the how the share of your team's offensive possessions that you finish by attempting a shot, drawing a foul, or turning the ball over. And so like Dylan Brooks' usage rate is already pretty high. It's like 27%, which is not superstar level, but like pretty high, especially for Dylan Brooks. And so when he goes out, when Booker's not available, it's up to 38.2. Dylan Brooks has a 38 usage rate. And the list of players in NBA, the reason Tom's laughing, you'll hear these names. The list of players in NBA history who have had a 38 usage rate for a full season are Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, the version of Russell Westbrook right after KD went to the Warriors, Houston era James Harden, Giannis, and Luka this season. And Dylan Brooks is using possessions like those guys when Devin Booker's off the floor. And they've needed it. And it's kind of worked. Like, he's averaging 22 points a game. He's drilling turnaround jumpers. He's yapping at everybody. And he's driving the basket. And he's shooting 51% from mid-range. Like, Devin, this has been an unbelievable start to the season for Dylan Brooks. I just kind of wonder if, like, is that going to work against this Thunder defense? You know? Like, or if it does work against this Thunder defense, would it work against, like, a version of the Spurs that has Wemby back or something? You know, like it seems like a lot to ask, but this whole start for the Suns has been a lot to ask. Why stop now?
I know. You know, it would be so fascinating. I hadn't thought of this until you just mentioned about, you know, with the way that the Thunder are playing, this might not even matter. Just alpha Dylan Brooks, goat Dylan Brooks. I feel like we're if the Suns win, we're going to avoid the... If the Suns beat the Thunder, we are going to avoid what I think will be an absolutely aggravating debate nonstop for the rest of the season, because I feel like one of the things we haven't experienced as NBA fans yet is the debate about should the NBA Cup championship actually count? Because what we're avoiding here, if the Suns pull this off and upset the Thunder here, on Wednesday night, we don't have to hear if the Thunder win the NBA Cup and then let's say they tie the Warriors win record, but the championship does not count towards their record. If the Thunder run the table in the NBA Cup, that win won't count on their 82 game regular season schedule. So they're 23-1 right now. If they go and they win 72 games here, 73 games, there's going to be an issue where we're going to say, yeah, they won, they beat the, or they tied the Warriors record, but did they really? I think they actually should deserve the credit for winning because they actually won more than that because they have the championship win in the cup. But the way the weird rules are that stats per game, like individual stats and the, and the game, the win-loss column is erased. It doesn't count to your end of season total. So I hadn't thought of this until you brought it up. It's like, wait a minute. We're talking about maybe the Thunder are going to have the greatest season ever, but we haven't even thought about there might be a controversy and a huge scandal here if they end up having like really close to the all-time win record, even with the Bulls or the Warriors, that if they do run the table and win the NBA Cup, it won't count to their win total, which, oh my, my mind is already melting just about the endless debates about this.
Well, the good news is you look every year for what the asterisk is on every great team, right? You're like, well, every title winning team has an asterisk. All these
every
great,
title so winning team both, has an asterisk. Yep.
So now we have one preloaded. You know, either it's going to be that they won more games, but then it didn't count, or yeah, they will, but they didn't win the NBA Cup. So you know, like it's either way, there's going to be an asterisk for the Thunder. But yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that one of the few teams to actually like push Oklahoma City late into a game this season was Phoenix a couple weeks ago. It was like I think it was 123-119 that game wound up. So like. And that was obviously with Devin Booker there. As you said, he's questionable with the groin strain. So we'll see, TBD. But like, I think we write off the Suns at our own peril. But I think there's probably a pretty good reason that the heavy favorite is the Thunder in this one, and that they are looking like the heavy favorite to, you know, go ahead and clean up and win the rest of this tournament. No matter who they wind up facing, they would wind up facing in the semifinal, because that other quarterfinal matchup is pretty tasty.
Yeah, and we're year 10 of is LeBron washed debate. So that's another fun one that we're going to go through. If he plays well, we're going to, you know, say, oh, he's going to play another 5 years. And if he doesn't, then we're going to say he's washed again and that this is his last season. But he comes out and just dominates down the stretch in his last game in a way that it felt like vintage LeBron, you know, the Toronto thing where he had his streak snapped and then he comes out and just dominates down the stretch with 10 straight points to close it out. LeBron is, it looks like he'll be playing in Wednesday night along with Austin Reeves and Luka Doncic, which, you know, was this thing we were waiting to see all season long, and they've played and they played very well. And when you see on the Spurs side, they're not going to have Wemby, but they've got Dylan Harper back and Stephon Castle and De'Aaron Fox. And it's just, it's really cool to see that without Wemby, they've been awesome. I think they're 7-3 or 8-3 without Wemby this season. And I didn't see that coming because of how dominant he was on both ends of the floor. If you look at the history, the long hallowed history of the NBA Cup final, we had in 2024, the Lakers beat the Pacers. And then in 2025, Milwaukee beat OKC. Both of those teams had Darvin Ham. The champs don't have Darvin Ham out here anymore. But OKC revenge game against last year, they didn't win in the NBA Cup final, but it didn't count, you know, in the end of season standings. Didn't count in the stats. If you remember Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, that was a big talking point last year. But I think OKC does it. Unfortunately, Dan, we might have to exist with another. Is this a 20-game win streak that they're on, or is it just 19? Because sure. The win didn't count in the NBA Cup final. That's my projection, is OKC over the Knicks. I think Lakers, OKC come out of the quarterfinals and play in the semis on Sunday, and we'll see Knicks, OKC in the final with OKC winning. Do you have any sort of predictions as we go forward, or just you're going to be sitting there and saying, I'm not filling out my NCAA bracket, I'm just here for the games?
No, I would. I mean, listen. It's all right. Obviously, everybody listens to this and they're going to clip this out. So I got to be careful. But like, also, who cares? I think, yeah, I would take the Knicks as well. I think the fact that you're dealing with a pretty fully healthy team, minus Deuce McBride, that's a potentially big issue. He's been awesome for them, and he had the ankle sprain, did not play against Toronto, but he's an important piece of their backcourt, but not a Franz Wagner level piece. And so I think, yeah, that idea of you got Cat back, you have the rest of their rotation kind of humming. I think the Knicks advance. And then I'm going to zag a little. I'm taking the Spurs. I think the Spurs are going to, it's a roadie and no Wemby, but I'm going to have to see that Lakers perimeter defense deal with Fox, Castle, and Harper before I believe it. We've talked about this before on this show. The Lakers have been awful defensively when they've had Luka, LeBron, and Austin Reeves on the floor. That was started last year. It has continued this year. 121.9 points per 100 possessions allowed with those three guys on the floor. That's like near Pelicans Jazz territory. So, and like the Spurs finally have all three of those dudes on the floor, and they are like rim pressure, get downhill, get into the paint, kick out spray, and you're going to get Julian Champagne in the corner. You're going to have Harrison Barnes in the corner. I think, and yes, Marcus Smart is back for the Lakers, so that can help at the point of attack. I think that even with Luka being so dominant, he beats the Spurs damn near every time he plays them. No matter what, I feel like that Lakers defense is going to get shaken up and is going to be exposed here. And so I'm going to take the Spurs to pull the upset, go on, and then, yeah, OKC's going to mop them up, and OKC's going to win the whole thing. So we're at the same point.
I was going to say, if it looks like my screen is shaking, it's because there's dinosaurs. I talked smack about the Raptors earlier, and just like Jurassic Park, they're outside, and my whole place is shaking. No, I continue with your picks here. I just wanted to let the people know that I am not going through an earthquake right now. It's just dinosaurs.
Yeah, Tom's okay. He's safe. It's the pitchforks are at the door from the Raptors. And Raptors fans, who famously are very chill when they feel a slight against their team. That's all I got. I think that if there's a reason that everyone's picking the Thunder, it's because the Thunder are better than everybody else. And, you know, if I'm right about the Spurs, I'm a legend. So that's why we're going with those two things.
I like it. Go for the high upside pick. And I think that's what you did here. I want to see Wemby back. I want to see Devin Booker back in due time. Jalen Williams is back. LeBron is back. It feels like on some level the NBA is healing and the NBA Cup is here, and I'm excited to see how things finish out. Saturday, we've got the semis, and Tuesday with the finals in the NBA Cup. Last year it was Milwaukee. The year before that, the Lakers. We'll see what happens here on out. Hey, want to give a shout out and a reminder, a shout out to our production team, Sarah and Emmy. Thanks so much. And I also want to remind everyone, all of our NBA content is going to be on one Yahoo NBA channel on YouTube. So if you want to watch KOC, the dunker spot, and the big number, go check it out on the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel, which is debuting December 22nd. An early Christmas gift for everybody is the own all-in-one channel there for all your NBA needs. So go check that out. Go subscribe to our that channel. And wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure you give us a 5-star review. And shout out to Ryan as well on the production squad behind the scenes. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Big Number. We will be celebrating the victor of the NBA Cup in Vegas next week. So can't wait to see that. And until then, enjoy the NBA Cup and enjoy all the festivities on Wednesday night, and we'll be back next week.